some people assembled. Good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing today? Weakness. I actually had to pull over and sleep last night on my drive. What type of weakness is that? Let's dig in. Looks like we got some people. Good morning, everybody. Glad to see you on. Obviously, these are travel logs, so there's none of the normal music and sort of stuff. But it is a great day to be alive. It's a great day to be alive in God's country. And it truly is God's country. It's a gorgeous sunrise. Artsfest.com to get your tickets or to make a donation. Your donations are deeply appreciated. Thank you for all you're doing. You are so important right now as we pull this thing down to the wire. This is an entirely donation-driven event, so tickets, or if you can get tickets to come, we'd love to see you there. Set your own price, and if you can't afford a ticket, let us know. We have plenty of tickets for you. So, Bart's Fest, we pray to be the greatest revival in human history. And I think that's heading that way. People coming from all over and people tuning in from all over. And then, of course, on the Friday, the 27th, this Friday, Mike Lindell is coming. We were in touch with his office yesterday. Speaking on that day, it's Slipper Revolution Day, so we're going to be celebrating Mike Lindell and all that he's done for this nation, hoping all the patriots around the world wear their slippers. That's so important, because we want to show some love for Mr. MyPillow. It still cracks me up every time I say I mean, don't think this isn't respectful, because the guy has done so much for this nation, and yet he's a pillow guy, and they end up thinking he's like one of the most dangerous people in the country. That totally cracks me up. So, the left is apparently missing the idea of what real strength is. Because Mike shows real strength, and what they're really afraid of is probably because he proclaims Christ in his life. You know, remember what Pastor John Benzinger said? The demons, we may question Christ, but the demons know who he is. And that's something to keep in mind all the time. So the sun is coming up. It's beautiful. So again, Mike Lindell, on Friday, he's going to be speaking, and that's going to be at Bart's Fest. That's for Slipper Revolution Day, so get your slippers. Head on over to mypillow.com or frankspeech.com, one of the two. Great savings, great specials. Get over there, use your promo code BARTS, B-A-R-D-S. They also have great pillows, sheets, comforters, you name it. Also, at Bard's Fest, we're going to have a huge display of Expedition Coffee. It's going to be there. I think they're bringing in 10,000 different tubs to give samples and encourage people to try it out. And so I think everybody who's tried it so far says they're pretty happy with it. And there's more to that product line coming out here in the coming months. We're going to kind of introduce that at Bard's Fest. Also, make sure that you get ready on Cloud Hub. Lots to do on Cloud Hub. We have to set up our site, but we're going to be live streaming through Cloud Hub, through their meetings. So look for that. Cloud Hub's working with us. That's going to be amazing. There's a lot of good things going on. It's going to be a big event. And I'll be straight up. This is our first big event like this, so there'll probably be some technical glitches, but we'll recover. We all know Duncan from Patriot Transitions Voice. He's coming in to work with video. We've got a video team. And just a lot of great things happening. So a lot of moving parts. We'll make it all come together one way or another. So God's country. That's what this is. This is God's country. And it's been a deep history. And we're supposed to feel guilty about everything that we are now. What's been accomplished, which is all a bunch of just a bunch of nonsense. I mean, the way that the left works is that they go back into history, and the left goes through history to find all the components in history to try to make you feel guilty about the things that happen in the history of life. Here's the big little trick with the left, which is kind of an ironic little twist. The left is the cabals. The left as we know it, the agitators, the haters, the teachers. I hate to say it, but if you're a teacher, you're most likely a leftist these days. There's very few good teachers in our nation. There's very few good doctors in our nation. We'll talk about that too in a minute. But the left and its control elements is all run by the same people who have created the wars, who have toppled civilizations, and who have pitted man against man. You know, one of the things that they love to point out is all these racial differences now, which is critical race theory in principle. It's just another way of bringing in racism under a new flavor. It's like, it's always vanilla, except we're going to add some sprinkles, and this time they added a bunch of fish sprinkles on it, vanilla ice cream. It's pretty nasty. Critical race theory is a theology. It's not just an idea. It's a counter-theology in which the state is your God, and difference is the principal issue of all that we do. Difference is our key tool always be wrong unless the state tells us otherwise. That's kind of critical race theory in a nutshell. Keeping in mind that there will always be a master class, and there will always be one class that's better than the other in critical race theory, depending on what the elites want to accomplish. And it's, as a theology, it's easy to settle into schools when you have taken out God. We are wired, hardwired to worship. We're hardwired to be convicted to something in our life. And that, I believe, was part of God's design. And I think equally part of that is that God gave us free will. And by having free will, God allowed us to go through life and make a choice of which, of where we would be and who we would give our loyalty and love to. Obviously, God would wants us all to come back to Him. The problem with that is that man is very corruptible. We're all corruptible by the shiny silver object and the shiny silver things. It's literally like that statement you see squirrel and people are like, oh, where to go? You know, it's man is out here chasing the dreams that aren't even his. We're not chasing the dreams that God put within us. We're chasing the dreams that we find the lures to, the power, the corruption, the greed. That's too often what we're doing. And in simple terms, our life these days, as an aggregate whole, I'm not speaking to everybody, but on the average, the way the system has designed it is that we live in a place where life is, you are born, you get an education, you take a job which makes the most money, you acquire a house, it's an expectation, you buy it, you go in debt to buy it, you have a nice car or two, you go in debt to do that, you have a couple of kids or children. You usually need about, I think the statistic is 1.5 dogs. I'm not sure how you do that one, but at least you need to have a dog and maybe a cat. White picket fence around the place probably looks pretty nice. Eventually, as we move along, your debt will fluctuate. One of the greatest things that you are going to try to accomplish in your life is having a great credit score. And that great credit score is going to be one of your great life goals. So you'll ask people, like, what's your credit score? And they'll tell you, like, oh, I'm 750 or I'm 800, or, which, by the way, never used to be 800. That came up a few years ago. They increased it probably because people needed to be more incentivized. And that's not truth when I say that. So they keep changing the game to keep people lured into the traps that they create. So life ends up being this thing of accumulation and spending. And, oh, by the way, you can't get a good credit score unless you're spending money. If you cancel a credit card to get yourself out of debt, your credit score goes down. So the entire system is rigged towards you purchasing things and getting money. That becomes a worship. And we worship it all the time. The system is built on its growth and expansion based on us consuming and buying. And that's a cycle of constantly, perpetually buying and then throwing away and replacing and buying. So with that, we created this disposable culture. If we don't buy a car and think about keeping a car for 10 or 20 years or longer. We buy a car with the idea that get a 60-month loan on it, and at the end of that, we'll probably trade it in and get another car, which will be, you know, another debt and another refinance. And you'll hear these terms come up, like, I refinance my house, I refinance this. It's all just a debt game. And there's a lot of, we've worked really well as a human race in convincing ourselves that we're doing a good thing. This is one of the best ones I love. refinanced our house as we're trying to get where we can repay it. We can pay it down faster, but we also got some more money out of it. That is an absolute contradiction in itself. You can't pay it down, get more money out, and have a lower payment and pay it off any faster. Okay, that just doesn't happen. So these are the sorts of crazy loops we put ourselves in. It's all about worship. We have to break that cycle if we're going to be successful in where we're going to go. And a lot of people can't imagine how that can be, because in the process of this world, everything seems to be hand to mouth. So when I say that, many are barely able to make it, and I understand that. And everything is always on the edge, whether or not you're going to have enough money or not. Part of that problem is that we ourselves have to start returning back to the way God wants us to live. When we put ourselves back into the hands of God and let Him guide us, the problem we have is when we start to embrace God in that path, we're already in debt. We're already sitting with all this weight on us. So then, you know, we hear this comment like, well, what am I going to do? You know, I don't know what to do. Well, you have to begin by working with God, and you have to be diligent, and you have to do everything you can to pay off that debt. And it takes time. We all know that. We all know it takes time. But the more that we lean into God in that process of being, of working with, freeing ourselves from that debt, as we become free, there are more and more things that open up. Our life starts to change. So, by the way, I've just crested a hill here, and I'm looking over the valley, and it's a huge open expanse of windmills. And they're beautiful. You know, I mean, we can say whatever you want about wind power generation. It has a lot of, you can't run a country off of wind power, but you can definitely supplement yourself with that. But this is really a beautiful landscape, rolling hills with windmills forever and a beautiful sunrise. So, kind of interesting. Anyway, totally, that was a little rabbit hole for you. Rabbit trail. I didn't go rabbit hole. Yeah, rabbit trail. Rabbit trail. So our debt concept and the way that our life is built here is this worship of accumulation. I mean, we come into this world naked. You're going out of this world naked. Nothing you have in between, you're taking with you. So there's two ways of looking at life. You can say, I'm going to live the fullest life possible. And in so doing, I'm going to acquire as many things, do as many things, and I will be a fulfilled life. But that's a me focus. Or we can say, I'm going to go through this life, and I'm going to let God guide me where He wants me. I'm going to use my gifts and talents as God directs me. And whatever I have, God will provide for me as needed. Obviously, in between there, you're going to have to work hard. And that's the other part of this, is in this modern age, figuring out a way not to work hard has been one of the big goals and objectives of this culture. The modern culture seeks to do less and get more. And that inversion has to be, we have to correct that inversion. We need to be doing more to get less things and to accomplish more for God. I can't think of something more important than that, because we don't need a lot. You know, when I'm traveling right now, I'm traveling in my Jeep, and I set up the Jeep so that I have pretty much everything I need on this trip, not only for, but more than I need personally, because I've got a bunch of stuff for Parts Fest, right? But as I travel, the reflection is, how much do I really need in life? So let's just take this here. The Jeep is a vehicle, it's a transport, it's also a protection from weather. Driving along gets me places I need to go. I can even podcast from my Jeep, as I'm doing right now. And it may not be the level of mic that I like, or the studio setup that I have, but nonetheless, in simple terms, God has provided the tools right here for me to do this as I travel, and we can have a conversation like this and share our thoughts and experience the friend fellowship that we have each morning. In the Jeep, I have my camping stuff. I have my tools to repair the Jeep if I need to. And I have some food and a cooler. I love my Pelican cooler because it keeps stuff cold for like 5 days. But like a cooler in here that I can keep stuff cool with. And that means I can travel for a while without to get resupplied when I need to. So it's like a little mini, it's not a refrigerator, but it acts like a refrigerator to preserve food. So with that and some clothes and an ability to stop and get refreshed, what more do I need is the question. Obviously, it is not a house. Obviously, there is not a garden here. I get all that. But in the basic principles of living, we don't need a lot more than that. We tend to overinflate our needs. One of those interesting places, if you've ever tried to, and it's a good exercise. If I was to build a house, what type of house would I build? It's just an exercise that we should all go through regularly, even if you've already built a house or you're going to build a house. But you start to discover how quickly we can start adding things. It's like, well, I need a room for this, and I need a room for that, and I need a space for this. But why? Why suddenly did everything change when we start to design it ourselves, right? And you'll hear, well, this is my dream, okay. But what do we really functionally need? And when I say that, I don't mean to be living like a cardboard box or have to sleep in a Jeep your whole life. That's not my point. But we need to get down to some very realistic understandings of fundamentally what we need, and then working with our prayers and the way God guides us to build that which is not for us, but through and for Him. That relationship changes everything. One of the things that I think is worth looking at, and it's the ultimate conflict, and I'm driving through the countryside where much of this conflict occurred in the 1800s, which was the American Indian Wars. We have two cultures that clashed viciously, a European descended culture and a native culture that was here. Those two cultures warred each other, and they warred each other viciously. One culture was living in a semi-balance of the land. I will be honest, the Native American culture is a beautiful culture, but it also has its own issues on how it manages resources, and I'm not going to get into that today. But nonetheless, they were much more attuned to living simply with the way of the land. They were an outdoor culture versus an indoor culture. This is kind of important. Their homes were more nomadic, so the teepee, as we know it, would be part of their home structure. But the home that they lived in was God's home, which is this out here. They were living outdoors in the elements, in the real of the world. The European model of civilization was about conquering civilization, the manifest destiny model. So it is there for God gave us this, not to steward, but to conquer. And that has driven us pretty heavily in this nation to good things and to bad things. Unfortunately, where we are right now is we have conquered this world, and then we have also conquered ourselves by submitting ourselves to the tyranny which we by our own hand created. And we did so because we pushed ourselves away from the fundamental peace that was here all along, and that is God. There is a majesty when we travel across this nation in this glorious land. And when we allow ourselves to imagine the shaping of this land and what it took to be here and all the years of transformation, it's an amazing experience. But I'll also say, as I look across these landscapes, and a simple example that's always bugged me, and I see these toothpick telephone poles all over the damn place. We've done an amazing job of corrupting a land that by itself is very beautiful. We have to literally transform everything in order for us to go to where we want to be, and that is a daunting task. It's like the question of how do you eat an elephant? Well, you eat it one bite at a time. And in order for us to really make a break and to reset into a new republic, there are many, many values which we have to re-engineer and reinvigorate. Teddy Roosevelt happens to be one of my preferred presidents when I study him. Obviously, he was a rough rider, which means he fought down in Cuba in this military group. He understood the principles of being American. You're either an American or you're not. There's no 50-50 Americans. He understood the values of hard work and what it took. But he was also, and this is the part that seldom gets talked about, he was a naturalist. Being a naturalist doesn't mean he was an environmentalist. It's too big, there's two differences. Environmentalists are just global warming and crazy. Teddy Roosevelt understood the value of preserving the beauty of nature for society, but also understood the challenges in a modern society of having to exploit some of what was there for the benefit of growth of society. Like, that's the industrialization part. It's a fine line. It's not easy. And I think that from the experience that we've gained now over the last 240 plus years, we have regained enough understanding on how to grow a society with the methods that we have to steward our operations as we extract resources. We also understand the stewardship part of that, of how to preserve the beauty of nature. We are very much at principle core, we are a taking culture. We take and consume, but we don't do well in recycling and returning and giving. And our entire system is built around taking. You work for somebody, they take your labor. You give somebody ideas, they take your ideas. You give your labor, you give your ideas, you give your value to somebody who in turn gives you a piece of paper with a $1, $20, $100 bill on it or whatever. That is supposed to be a compensation for them taking from you what you want. When we look at the extractive resources of the day, like open pit mining, the extractive type removal of resources to benefit a society, we have failed to realize in this modern day that the new open strip mine of the turn of the century, which was polluting, destructive, left scars for centuries, that new open pit mine is us. And it's data. So look at what's happening. Look at how data companies are strip mining us for every single bit of data so that they can make more money off of you in ways that you didn't even know was possible. They're selling your identity. They're selling your DNA. They're selling your emotions. They're selling your attitudes, your behaviors, the way you use words. They're doing all this because what they're that is the new strip mining of the modern day. And it's heavily destructive on humanity. So back to this naturalist thing. The naturalist piece was a balance where we respected that there would be need to take resources and at the same time a need to balance the beauty of nature and preserve it for future generations. Yosemite was one of the great accomplishments of Teddy Roosevelt, to preserve Yosemite for future generations. That said, we are not going to be able to move forward successfully without a couple of things that we have to put in our toolkit and we have to become very wise on, which means we have to be very diligent in studying them. One of those things, obviously, we speak of it every day, is we have to return to the center of our faith and love of God. But I think sometimes we think that we look at God in terms of us too often and not in terms of this amazing world in which we live in. When you drive along this world, and I'm where I am right now, coming into one of the towns, and there's oil tanks on the horizon, and there's huge cargo trains across the horizon, and I see radio towers, and I see all sorts of power lines, and the typical indicators of the outer skirts of a city. The question that I think we have to ask, and should be asking, is this how God would want this world to look like? And I mean that. This is stewardship. When you look at your home, and we look at, and I've talked about this before, and it's one of these things, just one of the great questions that was ever put to me, and it was put to me by a liberal journalist. And I compliment him on the insight and the challenge of the question. And he said this. He said, I know that as a conservative base, he was talking to me, he says, you don't like environmentalists. He said, so I have a question for you. He said, when I drive along and I see the beautiful landscapes, he said, I'm simply curious. When I see somebody with a broken car in their front yard, run down shack and junk all over the place that they own in the middle of some of the most beautiful country, this was up in Montana, and they have an American flag and a cross in their yard, is that what you're fighting for? And let me tell you, that is a very penetrating question when you think about it. Because what it gets to is the stewardship in which we're living in this world by God. Putting a cross in your yard, putting a cross on your neck, whatever, putting a cross bumper sticker on your car, putting an American flag up, and then living like a hillbilly dirtbag. I'm sorry, those two things do not work together. Godliness is cleanliness, but part of that is also the stewardship of the world to which we are given. That means that we're trying to make where we live as beautiful as what we can within the way that God intends it. So when we drive through our cities and I see signage and I see these random fences that are up along the freeway and I see these freeways that we have that are, they themselves are like going to a bridge and you look at all the dirt and the muck there. You look at, you're driving along the freeway homes, the homes that were probably never intended to be near a freeway, but when they punched the freeway through, now they have a freeway in their backyard. And it's a massive sound issue. When we start to look at what we're saying, what we're looking at, and we start to listen to what the others said, that key word was listen. Listen to what, say, the environmentalist or talking about in terms of the way societies could be engineered and planned, we might want to start listening to as we bring ourselves together to unify rather than always pointing our finger at others as though we're better and they're not. I have no doubt that, in God's patience, He looks at us and realizes that we're trying to grow and we're trying to expand and we're trying to mature ourselves. But man, I'm driving next to an oil refinery right now. Ugh, what a nasty smell. There's an example. What a nasty smell. What a nasty thing. So that's all based on extracted resources. And it's all based on taking from the land. And it's all about taking from us and the world around us. We see house after house. And we see, even if you have row houses that all look the same, they're always going to be something different. Somebody's got to have junk on their porch and somebody doesn't. It's just that sort of respect for God's world of what is it that we're trying to accomplish and what is it, how are we stewarding our lives in a way that we are not just hoarders of material junk, because again, we're not taking any of this away. Now, these are just random thoughts, and it's not like there's a plan here I'm putting out going, okay, this is how we have to go A to B. But I do think there are deep thoughts we have to reflect on as we work towards trying to build into a new republic. We want our freedoms. We want our liberty. It's given. In fact, they're given to us. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're given to us by our Creator. Unalienable rights that can't be taken away except by Him, unless you're an idiot that gives them away because of an injection. But at the same time, as we go into this walk and we're putting God first, that world begins to transform in a way that we have never really touched. It's a wild frontier. And to me, that idea of resetting a republic where we put God first in all things, that takes us back and it takes us forward in a different way. What I mean by that is we go backwards to a more simple life. And that's where I started this whole podcast today, which was the comment of agrarian culture. When we started this country, all the warring and conquering and all that put aside, everybody that came over here had to be participative in some form of agriculture. You weren't going to survive. There wasn't a Walmart. There wasn't a Safeway. There wasn't some supermarket somewhere that you could run over and get all the supplies you needed, or a Home Depot to go pick up your wheelbarrow and your concrete mix. We literally had to be participant in everything that we needed to survive. And part of that was food, and food is an essential item. And you know my feeling on that in Patriot Gardens. It's an essential part of us resetting this nation. And I mean that in a big way, because we have to be set up in a so that we can start reconnecting with God's creation, the world, the earth. It isn't just us. And that's where, even in, within our own faith, we start talking about God and me and us as stewards. But it's not just us. This is a world out here that God created. It's a beautiful world. It's amazing. Except for the millions of telephone poles that ruin the horizon. You know, we've done an amazing job of not stewarding the world, but conquering the world. So these are the questions that we have to put to ourselves deeply and reflect upon, is what does a world look like as we start to build into it and we put God first and stewardship first? And with that, the respect that all things around us are created by God. And that's the kind of the last point here, is that going back into the garden and getting your hands dirty in the earth and growing things reconnects us in a very simple way to the power and glory of God. And that's something that we have to do. We literally have to get back to that place to reconnect with the true nature and spirit of all that He is. It is the power of His word is through the Bible, but if you stay in the book and you don't go out and you live in the world and experience the greatness of what He created, we're not getting the full picture. If we read the book and we don't go out and interact with one another, you're not getting the full picture. So there's the balance of understanding His word, but involving ourselves in the world. Right now we are hyper-focused, all of us, on the relationships between people. Because we're dealing with one group of people that are literally walking away into what is obviously a trap of the most horrific kind, accepting an injection, accepting all of that to walk away from God and walk away from who they are as humanity to be moved into something new called a transhuman. I'm not taking that walk. I'm going the other way. I'm going back to God farther. I want to go back to a place where I let Him guide, shape the world, shape everything around me. That means that I'm open and willing to let God guide me in ways that I may not even feel comfortable. So when I say that, it's like the iconic areas we've touched on before of owning a car, owning a house, all those things. For this day, it's important. But if God decides that's not a direction we need to go, we have to be willing to go there if we really want to pursue that with Him. Modernity, the evolution of technologies, they're a trap. They're man's attempt to become God. Because man has not learned to steward the powers that he has of creation within him and instead seeks to accomplish God-like things. All of that centers from the fact that we have lived in this world for too long and there's an idea of conquering God's world, not respecting and stewarding God's world. So I would just encourage us all to reflect very deeply on that. These are not discussions that you solve things with, but they're reflections that we have to constantly keep before us, because much of the way that God works is not black and white. It's a process. And God works through us, and He rebuilds us, and He breaks us and rebuilds us, and it's a constant process. So as we start to open our hearts up to things, and we start to say, okay, God, I'm not going to limit you, that's a big one. I'm going to listen to you. There's another big one. I want to respect and love your world as you would want me to love it. Not just respect and love you, not just to respect and love my neighbor, but I want to respect and love my world. And that's probably, ironically, the one thing that gets missed most in our teachings and scripture is that respect and love the world, the creation of God's creation, as we would love Him, what do we have? If we destroy this that we are in, if we ruin this to such a degree and we still say, well, I've got Christ in my heart, what do you have? And what does that accountability say when you come before God and you say, but God, I did all sorts of sacrifices for you. We did this, we did this. And as Christ told us, he reminded us, there will come a day, and I'm paraphrasing, where you will say, Lord, 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 look what I have done. And I will say to you, I do not know you. That isn't the walk I'm going to take. It isn't the walk I hope any of us want to take. And to do that, we have to open ourselves up to such a greater view to realize that when we're out here and we get away from our little cubbies and our homes and our and that roaring fight that happens on the digital space, and the issue of the mass sheep that are getting inoculated and all that stuff, there is also another dimension out here, which is the world in which God created. This is where He lives, and He lives beautifully out here, and it's easy to reach Him. So that's where I think I would. Take a look at the beauty that's around you, no matter where you are. up in Canada. I used to go up to Manitoba a lot. I lived in northern Minnesota. I used to travel up to Manitoba, and I think Winnipeg's a really beautiful city in its old city, and I think that there's a lot of beauty up there. Canada has like the biggest, most vicious, in Winnipeg they have, like the most vicious mosquitoes in the world. They'll eat you alive, I swear. I think if you stood outside long enough, they'd drain all your blood and you would just like shrivel to nothing. That's part of the North Dakota Central Plains culture. But in spite of the mosquitoes, and I say that because, and a little bit tongue-in-cheek when I say that, because you get up there and you're like, oh, look at this beautiful country, and then all of a sudden the mosquitoes come, and you're like, oh, man, it's still beautiful. So in spite of the challenges that we face, let's keep our eyes on the beauty of what the earth is. We have to start being able to visualize and vision a world ahead where we can go back to return harmony with the earth. Old or the old world. One thing I will tell you is you go through these old churches, and I'm thinking in particular in the churches in southern France, and the cathedrals down there, down in Toulouse and Marseille and Lyon, and kind of through the southern part of France where you have a different influence. It goes back to Roman period. And you see these, and before as well, there's in the south of France, there's what's called the Languedoc culture, which is it's got its own history, but nonetheless. And even though a lot of that was Catholic influence, what I will tell you is that those cathedrals, when you walk in them, have such reverence in the way they're built for God. So we need to return to that in all things we do, a reverence for God in all things around us and our stewardship. And if we do that, we start to truly transform this world in such a powerful way that God lives in us and everything and everything we do. That's what I think is most important. So keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil, never relent. Always press into the fight. Prayers are our centerpiece to humility, our centerpiece to connecting with God, our centerpiece to giving worship and joy and harmony with God in all things. So keep your prayers up, especially this day when we have so many people traveling the next couple of days. Please keep your prayers up for the many that are traveling to Bardsfest. And with that, always remember, no matter how hard it is, God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And right now, there's many, many challenges coming at us from different sides. They want to try to crush anything God-related, anything related to the Holy Spirit. This is what they fear. So let us not fear. God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And in the end, God will always win. We have our role in that. It's a big role. And our role, as we talked about today, so much of that role is built around our stewardship of His gifts that He's given us. So have a blessed day, Patriots. I'll probably tune in a little bit later for another travel log. Until then, or until the next time, God bless.